Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, October 7th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Now, what have we here, Auntie Christine?
The world is full of naughty schoolboys.
Actually, I'm not a naughty schoolboy, but I am your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. I have something truly extraordinary in store for you today. As you know, this sex education podcast series takes a look at the world of fetish sex, kink, and alternative sexual lifestyles. We touch on topics both familiar and exotic, and I chat with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world.
What does Nana do to little boys who are late for school?
Oh, Nana, wait. Listen, today we add yet another unique voice to this growing chorus. I have the distinct pleasure of introducing you to my special guest, the beautiful and talented and oh-so-smart Sophie Hirschfeld. She is a plus-size model, a stripper, a cam girl, a phone sex actress, and a writer. But I think she's best described as a philosopher of sex. Oh, and I should mention that she's also absolutely hilarious. We will be talking about her career as a sex worker, as an activist, and as an educator. You don't want to miss a moment of this, sex fans. Be sure to check out Sophie at her fabulous website, sexandscience.org.
You are a disgusting little bugger.
You are so right there, ma'am. Listen, today's podcast sponsor is Eden Fantasies. Listen up, you guys. At EdenFantasies.com, you will have a unique opportunity to both shop and educate yourself about all the swell adult products out there. Of course, they uphold a high standard of quality in the toys they carry, but they are even more focused on customer service and consumer education. Their site has developed an online community of product reviewers and editorial staff, fantasy contributors, and renowned sexperts, including yours truly, Dr. Dick. In fact, you'll find my ever-so-popular handy-dandy guide to penis pumps for men and those who put up with us. Look for the Guides and Tips page, click on the guides, and you'll find me there along with a load of other insightful contributors who provide a wealth of information about topics ranging from BDSM to the G-spot.
Ooh, this is lovely. All schoolgirls together. No boys. Just girls all together.
Hey, you crack me up. I also want to turn your attention to Eden Fantasy's brand new e-magazine called Sex Is. You'll find tantalizing articles and informed opinions on sex, society, health, greening your sex life, erotica, and humor. And just in case you don't get a big enough dose of Dr. Dick here on DrDickSexAdvice.com, you'll find that I have a weekly column at Sex Is, too. It's called Dr. Dick on Demand. Look for the Sex Is banner in the sidebar of my site. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Sophie, and thank you for joining us here at DrDickSexAdvice.com. I am thrilled that we could make this time to be together. And I'm thinking, who better than you to give us the sex education we so richly deserve? Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello, and thank you for inviting me.
Good. Oh, and I should probably can guarantee you that there is a whole bunch of perverts out there in our audience, too. Would you like to say hello to them as well?
Oh, of course. Hello, everybody, and I'm so glad you're listening.
Good, good, good. So I'm loving your website, sexandscience.org. You have the most clever things to say. For example, you write, Sex and Science is where we talk about sex, how sex is becoming examined by science, and where science is joined up with sex to become a bit more interesting. Can you flesh that out for us for a bit? What does that mean to you?
Well, in the past, science kind of has avoided sex, and where we've talked about sex in a scientific sense, it's become technical, and we've made excuses for it. You know, things that we now say are, well, those two male deer are actually having intercourse. It used to be that they would say, well, one's dominating the other.
Uh-huh.
And we've reached a point where some scientists have been willing to open up mm-hmm. to the possibility of sexual things happening where they didn't in the past.
Right.
And, you know, this aversion is starting to go away. It hasn't entirely. We're still kind of combating it. But my idea was to bring information together from different sources where science was starting to study sexual behavior and where I thought it was really important.
Right.
And I also have found that there are elements of science where sexuality is involved and we just don't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
We just kind of ignore it. And so I highlight some of that. And then there's also been times where I've found that my interest in science has led me to linking sexual things to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something we're doing. And another thing that we're working on now is we're going to be doing our own experiments.
Wow.
On there eventually. I've got to fix the graphics on my site still. That's the one big flaw now. But I actually have them done. I just haven't put them
right.
on there yet.
Yeah.
I had been planning to do it a while back, and then my computer had an issue.
Mm.
And so I had to fix my computer before I could fix my website.
Right. And speaking of sex and science, you share the name Hirschfeld with somebody very prominent in the field of both science and sex. Any relation?
Magnus Hirschfeld.
Yes, sir. Ma'am.
Sort of. I am very, very aware of Magnus Hirschfeld.
Uh-huh.
The sharing of the name is... I'm not genetically related to him. That's what I'll say. But I have studied him extensively. In fact, I've found that apparently I know more about him than even a lot of, you know, Wikipedians
right.
haven't mentioned.
Right.
In fact,
right.
I've mentioned it to people editing Wikipedia
yeah.
a few times, but
yeah.
They have several ways of getting information,
mm-hmm.
and so they filter out things that they don't think the reader cares about.
Right. Which is too bad, because he's a very interesting guy, and I suggest people in our audience ought to Google Magnus Hirschfeld and see what comes up, because a big, fat person, important person in the history of human sexuality and science.
Yes, he is. In fact, the two most important historical figures that I think people should look up is different than most people think. Most people think Kinsey.
Yes.
But I actually think that Magnus Hirschfeld is interesting. And Colette Sidonie-Gabriel, I always try to make sure I say her name right, is a very interesting woman as well. She has a lot of what I would consider sociological views
mm-hmm.
from her time. And you also find other writings of hers that were just like little sexy things that
mm-hmm.
she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And so I highly recommend those too.
Cool.
But the information's valuable for her time as well. And she was a budding bisexual woman in her time in an environment where there was a lot of hostility towards that. And then she was also very openly sexual.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important people look at both of those figures. And to get information on Magnus Hirschfeld, I highly recommend looking at the Magnus Hirschfeld Institute. They'll give you information or you can look it up, and that's really helpful.
Right. You also say about yourself, Sophie Hirschfeld has many titles, as she works as a plus-size model, stripper, cam girl, phone sex actress, writer, website designer, and photographic assistant. My goodness, that's a mouthful. When do you find time to jill off?
I do it for work, and you know I have a boyfriend, so I have what I need available. It is time consuming.
Yes.
I do a lot of work all the time, and
yeah.
that's one thing that I think a lot of people find, they find it a little intimidating, I think, when they go, what do you do? And I just list off a bunch of stuff. Yeah. And sometimes I just go, I do a lot of stuff.
Just a lot of different things.
Explain everything.
I know. I was just down south in California for my niece's wedding, where I scandalized great numbers of people by passing out my Dr. Dick sex advice card. They were all, my goodness. Maybe I'll look at that later.
I have moments like that, too. I actually had an old boyfriend of mine. I don't see him anymore, but he's still a really good friend of mine. He invited me to Thanksgiving a couple years ago, and his family seemed really liberal. He had, you know, he had lesbian parents, and he was he took care of his grandma, and because she had a bunch of medical issues, and they invited me to Thanksgiving, and so of course a lot of strangers were invited. Well, I'm standing there. We're standing around eating hors d'oeuvres, and this lady's like, I was talking to this woman about her business. Well, you know, I've just been studying economics a little, and I was really interested in what she had to say. And all, she's like, well, what do you do? Because when I start sounding informed about something, they think my job's related to that
That's right.
thing.
Exactly.
And I'm like, well, I'm an erotic entertainer. And the whole room goes silent. And they're like, oh, well, that's interesting. And then they instantly change the subject. So, yeah, I've had my moments.
Yeah. I gave my niece and her fiancé, or now husband, a box of sex toys for a wedding gift. And I think it went over like, well, a bomb, basically. which is too bad, because, you know, they're not going to get duplicates of any of the things that I sent them. And, you know, it's fun, and, you know, sex is fun, and I think people should behave toward sex in a much more liberated sort of way, and a fun sort of way than they do, and which explains why I'm rarely invited to family occasions. Anyhow.
Yeah, I can see how that might not have gone up.
Yeah, I'm just like the black sheep, weird old uncle.
I really wish that when I first embarked on relationships way back when, that someone had done something like that for
no
me, though, because
I
was raised in a really religious background. You know, sex was a big no-no.
Yes.
I was abstinent until I got married, and then my marriage sucked.
And not in a good way.
And then when I left my ex-husband, I had nothing for sexual experiences to draw on. I had to discover myself at like the age of 25.
It's so
and,
true.
You know, it really sucked, you know, having to learn to masturbate when I was 25. So.
Well, you're making up for lost time, I'm happy to report.
Oh, I am doing so very much. I do it. I make up for lost time all the time.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about your sex work. I know that regardless of religion or nationality or gender, everyone seems to have an opinion about sex workers. Many are quick to judge the oldest profession and will happily categorize those that belong to it into some sort of stereotypical misconception or worse. While it's easy for any of us to pass judgment, unless we are in the same occupation, it's impossible to really know why sex workers do what they do. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy that you have joined us here. Why do you do what you do, so to speak, as it were?
Well, first I'm going to like give a little factoid that's probably going to piss every other little sex worker off. But as much as it strokes our ego when we say sex work is the oldest industry, it's not. The food industry is, and I have a reason to believe that. We know, based on the fossil record and studying biology, that many, many, many types of animals have had symbiotic relationships with each other, in which food was exchanged for services. And because of that, we can't really say that the sex industry is oldest because those relationships existed before sexual intercourse was a means of reproduction.
Right.
And so it's not the oldest on that. If you, even if people say, well, for humans it is, no, because when humans first became Homo sapiens sapiens, we were already exchanging both sex and food.
Right.
So if anything, it's they're
on
the same
ground. If I brought you
ground.
Food, it didn't necessarily mean that you were going to give me sex. You might groom me, as it were.
Exactly. I could pick nits out of
That's
your
right.
fur.
And happily so. And sometimes a few less nits in my fur would be so much better than, you know, a little bump and grind.
Okay, and then to answer your question, people get into the sex industry for many, many reasons. Usually it's to satisfy some need, and the most common one that people assume, we actually don't have very good data on this, which I think is really unfortunate, because you'd think that with something, with an industry this old, we would have more data, but we don't. But most commonly people think, well, they need money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually more complex than that. But, mm-hmm. you know, even then, you know, earning money is a basic need. But the sex industry can satisfy other needs. Things like curiosity or sometimes we need sexual attention. And I've
yes.
known sex workers who join the industry just because they're horny.
Right.
Or that's their fantasy. I worked with a woman who her fantasy for years was to sell her body
mm-hmm.
for sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned her on.
Yeah. What a great stroke on top of it, literally and figuratively.
Yes.
And somebody paying you good money for something that
yeah,
otherwise
something
you were giving
like.
Away for free.
And that's one of the huge, that's one of the biggest perks we
Absolutely.
Get is that we get paid to give pleasure and to get pleasure at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we get paid to be beautiful and sexy and
mm-hmm.
and that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and lots of women are doing it for absolutely free. And not only free, but, you know, they're not even being recognized for all the effort that they're being putting into it.
Yeah. And, you know, they don't get the perks we do.
Yes.
I mean, not just the money. We get... You know, we get attention for it. We
and
get
adulation.
Yeah, and so, sure, it's great to get paid for something like this.
Right. So, one of the misconceptions that I'm aware of is that a lot of people feel that women who are sex workers, men who are sex workers, are trapped because they're financially committed. And you just put a hole in that by saying that for many people, sex work is not necessarily motivated by finances. But even if it were, do you feel like you're trapped in the industry?
Well, if you'd asked me like 6 months ago, I would have I probably would have said that I was.
Really?
Even though I didn't feel like I was trapped.
Uh-huh.
But if I looked at it objectively, I was. I was in a place where I couldn't get any other job. But that situation was because there were no jobs to get. There were no other jobs for me to have.
Right.
And so if I look back and I say, well, technically I was trapped, but I didn't feel trapped.
Yeah.
And I
well, you could ask the same thing of anybody who works at the Burger King or, you know, at the
exactly.
Walmart. You know, do you feel trapped? Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
They can feel trapped. And,
yeah.
and likewise, those people, if you ask them why they don't change jobs now, even if they do feel trapped, they're trapped for some of the same reasons
right.
that I might be trapped.
Right.
The economy right now is not friendly to people looking for work.
Right.
And
or entrepreneurs in particular.
Exactly. So they're not going... I mean, even me, I've got an associate's degree,
mm-hmm.
and I'm... I dropped out of college with 18 credits left towards a bachelor's.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I've got almost a bachelor's. I've got an education.
Yes.
So
that,
it's not
it's
like I'm
clear
not
how you,
marketable.
Yes, it's clear by how you articulate yourself. So absolutely, absolutely. Good, good, good.
Mm-hmm.
So are you happy with what you're doing?
I am very happy. I really love my work. And... it makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. There's In fact, I really like the element of bringing pleasure to other people mm-hmm. in my work. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's really reinforcing. I feel good about it. You know, I feel good because, I mean, I get to orgasm mm-hmm. for work. And, I mean, not always. It does suck when a guy hangs up too early and you don't get a come. But usually I get to masturbate.
Men are pigs, honey, on the phone or in person. Don't you know?
Yeah, well, sexual behavior, Carrie, is pretty consistent over the phone as in person. But,
that's
you know,
right.
He comes, he's done. That's it.
Goodbye.
But, yeah, it's a great...
I suppose you're in a position, a privileged position, of also imparting some kind of sex education to the people that you interact with.
Yeah.
You know, I find that that's, you know, I do that all the time in terms of, you know, I do massage and body work because I really like to do it. And it's a wonderful way of interacting with people and educating them about their bodies and even their sexual response cycle. So it's, I suspect that you see that yourself, yes?
I see that a lot, actually. In fact, when I first started, it was really disappointing finding out that so many people didn't know that much about anatomy. it was like, and I've literally had to explain to a guy why the clitoris mm-hmm. was not the vaginal opening.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
absolutely.
And when you actually have to educate somebody on that, it's a little disconcerting. It makes me go, oh my gosh, what did you do in school?
Or what are you doing to your partner? If you
yeah.
have one. Or if you don't, we certainly understand why not.
Yeah, and so, and that becomes interesting. And I've also had to, in fact, my work involves me becoming a teacher and a counselor and all kinds of things.
Right.
And so
right.
I educate a lot.
Right.
And I have actually educated people on matters like physics right. while I was on the phone.
You sound so hot.
I had a guy, my stage name right now is Tesla Coil.
Oh, how cool.
And so it's an obvious reference to Tesla himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a guy call, and he had watched... I don't know if it was something on the History Channel or what it was, but it was a misportrayal of Tesla's theories.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also involved, I don't know, he had some other stuff wrong, like the battle between Tesla over, you know, the battle that Tesla had over trying to get people to use the direct current
yes,
network.
Right, right, right.
I'm going way off course here. Anyway, in short... The guy asked me a question, and I pretty much straightened him out on Tesla.
I love it.
So, and I got paid to do it.
There you go.
It was a really expensive education he had that day.
There you go.
But he called me back. So.
Excellent. You know, return clients are the most gratifying, if you ask me.
Well, they're not only the most gratifying, but according to economics... The return clients are 80% of your income.
Right.
You get it's called the law of 80-20.
Mm-hmm.
The 20% of your clients are 80% of your income.
Right.
For a self-employed individual.
Right.
So we really need those guys.
So speaking of which, do many people in your life know of your profession? And if the majority do not, what do they think you do?
Well. Most of the people in my current social circle know what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that's because, you know, they're on my Twitter, they're I'm really open where mm-hmm. I am now. I just moved. Where I lived before, nearly nobody knew.
Uh-huh.
My family doesn't know, and I lived in a small town, so I didn't really want
yeah.
to get killed over it.
Yeah, there's some wisdom in that, don't you know?
And I know people think that's kind of funny, but there actually was a real risk. I lived in
oh,
a
absolutely.
Town where people were beaten up for being homosexual
that's
and
right.
where domestic violence was a problem. And
mm-hmm.
so it's like, haha, I didn't want to get lynched. Well, there's a little element of truth to that. So
yeah.
they thought I was a website design and content provider, which is not entirely untrue.
Yes.
I do a lot on the internet. Mm-hmm. I do build some websites. That's not my main income. Most of the websites are for me or for the photographer I work for. So it's not entirely untrue. And
right.
I did help with web work for some of my contract holders. Contract holders, when they find out that you're that you know about stuff like that, will ask for your advice. And
right.
so I have had some of them say, hey, I need help with this. And, you know, I naturally want them to succeed because that makes me money.
Right.
So I've given advice to them before.
Cool. So are you in a relationship? I think you said a few moments ago that you have a boyfriend.
Yes.
Cool. Is that of long term?
No. Well, define long term.
More than half hour, 45 minutes?
It is more than a half an hour and 45 minutes.
Excellent. See, they said it wouldn't last.
Yeah.
So my next question then is, do you find that sex work impacts on your relationships in general and the intimate ones in particular?
I don't really think so. I mean, if anything, I've gotten some tips, you know? So
I do love you.
Proving things, but most of the time, my sex life is awesome, and my work sex life is awesome. And
see
I
see how she's counting her money in front of the poor folks. This is how she is. This is how that that Sophie person is. She counts her money in front of the poor. But go ahead,
yeah,
my dear.
I'm sorry. If you're sexually deprived, I'm really sorry because I totally. I've been sexually deprived before,
yeah.
So I guess it's kind of like the nuevo riche, you know?
Exactly.
That stigma.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that my personal sex life, if anything, has benefited at this point.
Well, it would seem to me also, I hate to interrupt, but it would seem to me that, you know, being in a relationship with someone of the other sex and you doing, you know,
or the same sex.
Or the same sex, for sure. But I meant in terms of the, you know, the call, or phone actress, phone sex actress, it would seem to me that the more you knew about male sexuality, the better off you would be in terms of, you know, your performance and, you know, getting your clients to achieve what they've called you to achieve. Yes?
It helps a lot. Mm-hmm. It really does.
And you can say
words.
You can say, like, cock and cunt and pussy and all that kind of stuff as opposed to, you know, penis and vagina and stuff like that, which a lot of women in particular trip all over.
You know, it's funny because I can totally identify with that, too.
Oh, no kidding.
When I first started, I had a really difficult time not using proper anatomical words.
Right.
And the first week of my work as a phone sex actress, and at the time I was doing erotic texting, too.
Uh-huh.
And I had a tough time finding
yeah.
words.
Yeah.
It was... You know, it took me a while to make that. It took me, well, I think it took like a week, but it felt like forever
uh-huh.
to condition myself to use words like cunt and dick and
yeah.
and things like that, especially
well,
since...
all of us are socialized against that, and women in particular, you know, because
oh, yeah,
it's
women.
Not feminine, it's not nice, it's not sweet, and, you know, God is going to punish you anyhow, so
oh, yeah.
there you go.
It, we were taught that it was dirty.
Yeah.
It's dirty to say those things.
Yeah.
But on top of that, those aren't words that we use when I read my anatomy books.
Uh-huh.
And that's the
which
approach I
which is
kind of
too bad, it seems to me.
I approached this job after intense study of sexology.
Mm-hmm.
I had spent 2 years going, gosh, I was almost not educated at all
yes.
as a
so
child
true.
Over sexuality.
Yeah.
And I needed to compensate for that.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
so I basically overcompensated. I got... as many books as I could on
yeah.
the subject that seemed accurate. And, you know, I was looking up classes online, and
mm-hmm.
I have a degree in health education, but that didn't teach me enough of the details that I needed to know.
Right.
It gave me the tools to know where structures were in my body, but it didn't give me the tools to learn about human sexual behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came to this job with – all of these anatomy books behind me. Mm-hmm. And you know, my health classes and you know, my degree. I didn't come to it from any sexual experience.
Right. So
it definitely took some adjustment, you know,
because
I wanted.
It's funny because I get regaled on a regular basis from people who visit Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, and people say to me things like, you know, if you were really a PhD, a professional person, a therapist, you would not say cock and cunt. You would say penis and vagina. And, you know, I disagree with that. I think, you know, in fact, I, like you, have to, you know, work at using those terms and have them as fluidly available to me as penis and vagina, because it's important. I mean, this is the vernacular. This is how people talk. And, you know, I want to break down the taboos, and I can hardly break down the taboos if I'm not using the inappropriate words.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. In fact, I have articles on my old site that were devoted to using terms like that just so that I could educate people, because I looked at my work and I was like, how am I going to teach the common person about their anatomy and about the things that they really need to know if I'm not using the terms that they're using? When I talk to people about things like here's the vagina and here's the vulva, those terms will turn people off.
Right.
From what I'm trying to teach them. And if I have a message about safety, or if I have a message about anatomy that they really need to know, I can't have their brains turning off on me.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, I need to use those as supplemental terms to teach them the term without actually intimidating them.
Mm-hmm.
Because people aren't going to learn if they're bored or if something does not compute.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that it is important at times to use common terms. It's important to say dick. It's important to say cunt. It's important to say pussy. And the reason why it's important is to educate, because educating people is more important than using proper terms.
And besides, if you don't blanch or blush, or if I don't blanch or blush when I say those kinds of things, that is at least tacit permission for other people to do the same thing, to get over it, to move along. You know, this is vocabulary. It's not going to bite you. It doesn't, you know, diminish human sexuality. It doesn't diminish you. The world is not going to come to a stop just because you use it.
And in fact, taking control of how we use those words is a way that we keep those words from controlling us.
Yes.
If we teach people to command those words and how they use them, then we're less likely to face people having issues with, you know, vulgar language, quote unquote.
Good.
And we're more likely to see them use those words productively, you know. And of course, that doesn't mean that we're going to be, if we keep doing this, if we keep making these terms common and we keep making them okay, over time, they're going to get more boring and people are going to be more creative.
Yeah, desensitized. Absolutely.
They will, because part of the reason why people use them commonly now is because they're appealing. They're a little taboo.
Mm-hmm.
It's enticing. It's sexy to be that taboo. I've had guys call me and go, I find it so sexy that you can say the word cunt.
Yeah.
And they love it.
Yeah.
But the reason why they love it is because their wife won't say it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And, but at the same time, you know, if we stop using cunt, we'll probably be using something else. We'll come up with another word. You know?
Hoo-ha. How about hoo-ha? I vote for hoo-ha.
I don't like that word.
I hate it.
I think it's juvenile.
Or BJ. Or
it's like
BJJ.
Oprah's the JJ, national television.
If that doesn't carry the day, I mean, like, just like, what does that, but anyhow, I digress.
Although I have said, I admit, I've used the word JJ because I thought it was funny at the time.
Yes, certainly it is, it's a hoot.
And if you randomly drop that word somewhere, it's a great word bomb.
Yeah.
Especially for people who are educated and know where it comes from.
Right. And around Thanksgiving dinner, that's the one to use.
Exactly. Actually, I have a sister who uses the word private.
Oh, yes.
And she teaches everyone to use, the kids to use private.
Yeah.
And
well, that's going to bite them in the ass later when they're going to want to share that private thing with somebody that is you know.
Yeah,
not
I've had this conversation with her before. I was like, you do realize the children who don't know proper terminology are more at risk?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had to explain to her that you need to really educate your children.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, she knows better than me, yeah, apparently, or something.
I'm surprised still, you know, to this day. And it crosses all generations in the email that I receive on Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, how many people refer to down there. Like, what does that mean? Does that mean Australia or what?
You know, it's so funny because I've had callers do that to me. And they won't say any term relating to their genitalia. They say down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that in order to keep their attention, you have to use their terms sometime.
Yeah, right.
Or you have to slowly introduce them to
like,
new terms.
What is going on down
and
there?
So it's really bizarre, and it's not really that erotic. When
it's
somebody
so true.
Calls and they're like, will you touch my down there? And it's really funny when they whisper, because I've had that happen too.
Uh-huh.
Where they're like, will you touch my down there? And I'm like, okay.
If I absolutely have to.
When you say that, it makes me feel like I'm violating an ethical rule.
I'm a sex worker, damn it. I'm not unethical.
So, it really, it's really funny to hear that. But, yeah, I get people doing stuff like that. Or they come up with other euphemisms that just sometimes are really bizarre or... You know,
it's hard not to laugh, you know,
had
if they're really fun
that,
ones.
I had a guy call me before that his fantasy was public masturbation.
Yes.
And he would say words like jack off and masturbate, but he wouldn't say penis or dick or anything
uh-huh.
like that. He would just, like, use a euphemism. He'd be like, my... And then he'd, like, come up with something really bizarre, like my deer horn or something. And I'd be...
What?
And it just throws you off. You're trying to be sexy and in character and everything, and you're just like, okay, this is one that I need to write down.
Listen, oh my goodness, look at the time. We're out of time for today, and I have so many more questions for you. May I ask you to come back next week?
I would love to.
Oh, excellent. But before we go, can you give us your website address and walk us around a bit?
It is www.sexandscience.org.
Don't the forget
most...
the .org, folks.
Yeah, don't forget .org. It's not a .com, it's .org.
Uh-huh.
And the most content right now is on the blog, so it's just /blog. There will be stuff pretty soon on the gallery, which I think is /G2. I've got some photo shoots to put up and things like that, and later on we'll have science-related photo shoots. So, but the gallery is not safe for work.
Okay.
So, anybody, you know, don't look it up at work. If you look at something up at work, stay on the blog.
Alrighty, words to the wise. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and until next week, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sophie. Hey, great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Sophie Hirschfeld and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is EdenFantasies.com, the one-stop place to shop for all those adult goodies you've been drooling over. Of course, you'll find a full line of top-quality toys, fetish kits, and sexy lingerie, but that's not what makes Eden Fantasies so damn special. What makes them so extraordinary is their social conscience. And that, my friends, makes all the difference in the world to a sex-positive guy like me. Their site is chock full of tips for the conscientious consumer, practical user guides, toy reviews, and their community blog, EdenCafe.com. You absolutely have to check out this site, my friends. It's so fun and sexy, irreverent and cheeky, but it's also full of exceptional information. Look for the Eden Fantasies banner right there on the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, and you can link to the brilliant Eden Cafe from there. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section, obviously, under Health, Science, subcategory sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.